The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast Esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Mostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of October 2015. Happy Halloween, guys. It's our Halloween special, and we've got lots to talk about. A little later in the show, I'll be joined by Henry Crane. He's a guy, of course, who's behind the haunted ghost tours over in Belle Island, which is not too far away from my house, actually. It's about a half-hour run and a little trot over on the ferry. But let me tell you, it's well worth it, because once you get off that ferry, you have to deal with the queen of the fairies. Belle Island is notorious for all kinds of paranormal activity. And a little later in the show, of course, Henry will be enlightening us as to what's really going on the Belle Island. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got an awesome news program coming up real quick for the paranormal news, but first I do have to mention something big that's going down this Halloween. On October 24th, you are hearing it right now, starting at 7 o'clock, there will be a series of three live ghost hunts being held at Admiralty House Museum, led by yours truly, Jonathan Mallard, paranormal investigator and author. This, of course, will be in support of the museum, as well in support of SPAN, the Single Parents Association of Newfoundland. Tickets are $10 in advance and must be purchased at Admiralty House. So in other words, you actually have to walk in to the building, sign up for your time you're taking, and actually pay in advance. Of course, there's three ghost hunts going on that night, just to let you guys know. The actual times are, there'll be a ghost hunt at 7 o'clock, one at 8:30, and one at 10 o'clock. If you or your friends are interested, of course, in participating in the Spooktacular Day at the museum, live ghost hunts that are being held, please contact Admiralty House for more information. And, of course, buy your tickets in advance, $10. All proceeds, of course, are going towards the Single Parents Association Newfoundland and, of course, Admiralty House Communications Museum. I'm making nothing off this. I'm actually donating my portion, too. I was offered half the money, and I was like, yeah, I'll give it to SPAN. I could care less about the money. I'm more about the research, and as I plow through to try to get a book written about this place, I just can't wait to have you guys show up on the 24th of October. Bring your ghost hunting gear, bring your cameras. And the best part, if we do manage to capture anything, I am going to be hosting a live reveal on Halloween Day, 4:30 to 5:30, Halloween, right before you go trick-or-treat with your kids. It's going to be a food drive. So this is actually two charity events back-to-back. So cool, right? And I'm so excited to be a part of that. Big shout out to Carla Watson. Thanks so much for taking the time the other day to sit back and actually, well, help me plan this out. So guys, once again, I'll remind you all, October 24th, 7 o'clock, 8:30, 10 o'clock, live ghost hunts, $10. Tickets can be purchased for $10 in events at Admiralty House Communications Museum. You'll have to show up, go in and sign up for your time. And live reveal, of course, will be on Halloween at 4:30. That's going to be a food drive. So guys, there you have it. Spooktacular Day at the museum. Hope to see you there. Now, it's Halloween. We got to get into some spooky news. But you know what? Sometimes the real world is just as spooky. You want to talk about aliens? Well, how about the potential? Yeah, you know exactly what I'm about to talk about. I'm going to talk about evidence. They have evidence of water flowing on the surface of Mars. Now, this edition of the paranormal news truly isn't paranormal at all. This is actually fact. This means that there's a chance. I'm not saying it's going to happen, and neither are the scientists, but I'm saying there's a chance. Mars, I mean, who knows what this place looked like millions of years ago. We've never been shall we say, looking for fossils in there. We have no idea if this was ever populated. So it's a pretty exciting thought. Maybe, just maybe, there's life on Mars. NASA has announced that it has discovered the best evidence yet of water flowing on the surface of Mars. I can't think of a better way to start off the paranormal news. New images returned by the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter have helped scientists to confirm that the mysterious dark streaks previously observed on the planet's surface are in fact formed by flows of briny liquid water that occur during the warmer months of Martian summer. Our quest on Mars has been to follow the water in our search for life in the universe, and now we have convincing science that validates what we've long suspected, said NASA's John Grunfeld. This is a significant development as it appears to confirm that water, albeit briny, is flowing today on the surface of Mars. While it has long been known that liquid water once existed in vast quantities on the Mars in the form of rivers, lakes, and oceans, today's revelation represents the first time that it has been conclusively discovered on the planet's surface in the present day. Its presence could even mean that Mars may be able to support primitive life forms. It took multiple spacecraft over several years to solve this mystery, and now we know there is liquid water on the surface of this cold desert planet, said lead scientist Michael Mayer. It seems that the more we study Mars, the more we learn how life could be supported and where there are resources to support life in the future. So there you have it. Not only did he kind of mention that there's a chance that we might find microscopic life there, that means there's actually things we could use on this planet. Yeah, if there's flowing water, all we got to do is seed it. That's all we got to do. We got to seed it. We seed Mars, and we may have another chance, another place to live. Let me tell you, some days after a rough day at work, I'd love to fly to Mars. Speaking of alien life, the majority of the public believes in alien life. Did you know that? Yeah, well, guess what? A new international poll has revealed that most people believe that there is alien life in the universe. Conducted by YouGov, the poll asked members of the public in the UK, Germany, and the United States whether they believed that our planet was home to the only intelligent life in the universe. More than half of those surveyed stated that they thought there was life out there. However, in both the US and UK, the majority of those were male, while in Germany, the majority were female. The poll also indicated that younger generations were more likely to believe in extraterrestrials than older generations, with only 45% of those over the age of 50 in the UK believing in alien life. While to date there has never been any conclusive evidence of intelligent life beyond our own planet, this hasn't stopped mankind from seeking out signs that someone else may be out there. An ambitious new endeavor to listen for extraterrestrial communications was recently funded by Russian entrepreneur Yuri Milner and backed by prominent scientists such as Stephen Hawking, who maintains that there is no bigger question than whether or not we are alone in the universe. During an announcement last year, NASA also indicated that we may find evidence of alien life within as little as 10 to 20 years, thanks to advances in planet-hunting telescopes and techniques. Just imagine the moment when we find potential signatures of life, said Matt Mountain of the Space Telescope Science Institute. Imagine the moment when the world wakes up and the human race realizes that its long loneliness in the time and space may be over. The possibility we're no longer alone in the universe. Personally, I think it's incredibly ignorant to think that our universe is devoid of life except for us. I mean, the building blocks of life can be found all over the universe. There's no doubt, from a science perspective, okay, that we are not the only Earth. There's no doubt. There's another planet that's a lot like ours, has similar climate, similar space between it and a body that it orbits. I'm telling you right now, I find it hard to believe that there isn't life out there, from a science perspective. And then you have the whole spiritual perspective. I mean, every religion out there is a creator. Answer me one question. If a creator took the time to put all life on this planet, okay, and put everything in swing, why the heck would they stop here? Food for thought on this Halloween. Well, don't think too hard, though. We want to get a headache. I mean, I can think of a lot of things that can give you a headache. How about a screeching dinosaur? Yeah. Guys, brace yourselves, because a live pterosaur has been filmed flying over Idaho. A recently released video claims to show what looks like a dinosaur flying over the United States. The controversial footage, which was allegedly recorded over Boise in Idaho by a perplexed onlooker, captures the moment the prehistoric flying reptile was spotted over the area. Sightings of large winged creatures have been have actually been reported several times over the last few decades, with legends of the Thunderbird still alive and well in Native American folklore. Famous cases include two of the cowboys who in 1890 allegedly killed a gigantic bird-like creature in Arizona, which had smooth skin and a face like an alligator. Cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman also has written extensively about the series of Thunderbird sightings that occurred in the 1940s. There was even an incident in 1977 in which three young boys in Lawndale, Illinois, were pursued by two large birds. As they tried to escape, one of the boys was allegedly picked up by one of the creatures and carried over a short distance before being dropped again. As for the new video, while it certainly looks impressive, critics have argued that it could very easily be a computer-generated hoax, and very little is known about the background or circumstances. The chances of it being an actual terrorist or are remote, to say the least. Well, I don't know about you guys, but after reading that story, I'm breathing a sigh of relief. I mean, I don't really want to be picked up and carried off by a pterosaur. I mean, whatever happened to ghosts and goblins and witches and devils, you know, the traditional Halloween stuff? We got freaking dinosaurs taken off with kids. Oh, my. I guess if there really was one, the FBI would know all about it, hey? Yeah, there's no doubt the FBI would probably know everything, right? I mean, there's a good chance the FBI would know. But, you know, sometimes I wonder just how much they actually know. The FBI file that has been discovered recently claims recovery of metallic UFOs. A controversial memo found by workers in Japan describes the finding of three UFOs in New Mexico. The questionable document was allegedly uncovered by investigators at the Haiku Center for UFO Research in Tokyo. It isn't clear if the memo is genuine or how it came to be there. However, there are rumors that the Bureau itself has expressed concern over its release to the public. An investigator for the Air Force states that three so-called flying saucers have been recovered in New Mexico. The leaked memo allegedly states they were described as being circular in shape with raised centers, approximately 50 feet in diameter. Each one was occupied by three bodies of human shape, but only 3 feet tall, dressed in metallic cloth of a very fine texture. The memo also claims that the craft were recovered in New Mexico because a high-power government radar installation in that region interferes with their control mechanisms. With no way to corroborate the authenticity or origins of the document, however, the chances of it being a genuine FBI memo about crash UFOs are slim to none. Personally, nobody in the FBI is going to let that slip through their fingers. My God, they'd be shot on sight. This is the Federal Bureau of Investigation, folks. These guys have their hands on a lot. But let me tell you, I highly doubt they have anything to do with extraterrestrial life. You want to know why? Do they wear black? No. Do they have black shoes? No. Do they have black shades? No. Are they the Men in Black? No. No. So they're not, it's not the FBI. It's the Men in Black. We've all seen the movies. We all know the truth. NASA discovered liquid water. What a week. What a week. Mars could have life on it. The majority of the public believes in alien life. There might be a live pterosaur flying over Idaho, snatching up your kids. So hide your wife and hide your kids. Here comes the pterosaur. And, of course, the FBI may have accidentally leaked claims of metallic UFOs. I highly doubt that one. But there's absolutely no doubt that each and every one of these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast. I am joined now by the chair of tourism, Belle Island, the man himself who is behind the haunted walking tour on one of the most haunted locations on the planet, so they say, good old Belle Island, which is only a few minutes away from my house, believe it or not. Guys, I'm really happy tonight to say that I've got Henry Crane on the line, sir. How are you today?
Oh, I'm feeling great.
Great to hear, Henry. Great to hear. And just first and foremost, do want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Odd to Newfoundland tonight.
Not a problem. Why, it's my pleasure.
Awesome. So, Henry, before we even get started, I know you have probably all kinds of projects and stuff like that going on in Belle Island. Do you want to just maybe drop a few things that might be going on in Belle Island right now?
Well, right now going on Belle Island, of course, is our 275th year as a settled community. It's been a come home year for us. And we've had music down at what's called Harry's Lookout. Once you come on, start to come up to BGL, you'll see it there. It's been put there, only finished last week. We have our Keeper's Cafe down next to the lighthouse. We have also music here in the daytime. And we have, we're coming up this coming Saturday, a week from actually yesterday, we're going on more with our come home year, and the Gregory Normor, which was our first settler, and Catherine, his wife now, they will be presenting their first child down at the Legion. And again, they will probably show up with redcoat soldiers, and they'll be presenting their firstborn son.
Wow.
So yeah, it's going to be, and there's still more to come. And like we just finished up a whole pile of plays for the summer, including what you alluded to, the Haunted Tour. So it was a great year for tourism, and we've still got some more events planned as we come into the new year. So we're having a gala ball, and Gregory and Catherine will be in attendance at that time for New Year's, and then they will wave adieu for 275 years again.
Wow. Right? It just so happens.
There's a bucket load of stuff happening with tourism.
Yeah, it seems to be like Belon's a pretty hot, happening spot. I did have the pleasure of doing a paranormal investigation in the Number Two Mines, the world famous Number Two Mines, and let me tell you, that was a great time. But you know, Belle Island is not just the ghostly mines that people talk about over there. There's all kinds of weird things and wonderful, wonderful things we get to talk about because this is a paranormal podcast. So Henry, without further ado, why don't you give us a couple of stories about what's going on over on Belle Island? In fact, I've read a couple of times, you know, that people say that it's one of the most haunted places on the planet. I'm sure there's a reason why.
Well, yeah. Now I got involved with our folklore many, many years ago because my grandmother was got me into it as a young boy, and she told me a lot of stories. If I heard a ghost story in Belle Island, she would be the one that would come scare you. She'd come and she'd say, or if I knew certain things, she'd say, okay, here's the facts behind the story, and then she'd explain this ghost story and why it was a ghost or why it was an entity or why it was a fairy, etc. And also, since that time, I took so much interest in it that over the last maybe 6 or 7 years, for sure, I've been collecting stories from the much older residents in the community, all about the folklore and the ghosts that perpetuate and live there on this island. And there were legends like the woman in white. Now that was changed over years. She was a white woman in the beginning, but it got changed. It doesn't matter. It's still the same entity. The ghost of Dobbin's Garden is another very popular or infamous, if whichever way you want to put the yardstick on that one. You've got the ghost of the miner who has been seen in Number Four Mines, and you were in Number Two Mines for your tour, but this is in Number Four Mines, and that's easily accessible, by the way, through what they call the concrete collar. Mm-hmm. And then we've had the probably the most horrific or prolific or whatever you want to call it, the most fearsome entity of all, which is the Fairy Queen, or the Queen of the Fairies. She is the most malevolent spirit to inhabit the whole planet, so people say. And we play her up quite a bit. Belle Island is the home of the Fairy Queen. And then we have another person who we play up quite a bit is the, and we just gave her the name of the school teacher because there was a shipwreck here back in, I believe, the 16th century with a number of kids, small children, destined for somewhere here in Conception Bay with a young school teacher. And basically, they have taken residence up in an area known as the Fire Road, where once was called Youngster's Gulch. So our entities, our spirits, our ghosts, our goblins, and our fairies all go from very benign to very malignant, very, very, very dangerous spirits.
Mm. And you know, I just got to get the scoop on everything. You know, the investigator part of me is coming out here. I just got to know. I kind of feel like I'm on the tour with you right now, and I know people are going to be dying to know about some of these entities. But tell me a little. I'm going to jump in and just say, tell me a little tiny bit about the ghost of Dobbin's Garden.
Well, the ghost of Dobbin's Garden is an entity that started to appear on Belle Island somewhere around maybe 1939, 1940. Probably a tiny bit later, I'm guessing, from the events that I've had from the older residents around the community. She is the spirit of a young woman. That young woman, by the way, actually disappeared. She was a serving girl, which was today's would be a maid, for a rich family. back in, I'm going to say, 1942, she disappeared. She was on her way home to Carbonaire. She left the Green, which is an area on Belle Island, and she was never seen again. It was shortly after that the hauntings or her sightings began. When she left that day to head back to Carbonaire, she wore a long gray cloak and boots, and that was the dress of the day. It was not a winter's coat. It was like just a long gray cloak that women used to wear. Anyway, she headed back to, she's supposed to go back to Carbonaire. Weeks later, nothing was heard. So they went and searched for her. Shortly after that, the hauntings began of Dobbins Garden. Now, why was Dobbins Garden? That's where the story begins. Like I said, that's where the folklore begins. It was true she disappeared. It was true she was never found. But up in the Dobbins Garden, there's a place in an area called the Grebe's Nest, which is a bird. Now, the Grebe's Nest is on the far side, the western side of Belle Island that faces Carbonaire. This young lady was known to have a boyfriend who was a German sailor.
Mm.
And the German sailor, of course, when Newfoundland declared war on Germany, the Germans were barred. But as you recall history, we had war boats that were sunk by submarines, and they had to take on supplies. And as the legend goes that as they were taking on supplies in the evening, she recognized one of the sailors. She was immediately subdued, brought into a house, and held there until the Germans could dispose of her that night. And they disposed of her that night by going up on the Grebe's Nest, western side of the island, which was not inhabited at all at the time. And they say that she actually escaped in the evening, only very shortly. And when she shouted out to the men who were working in the gardens, she shouted out for help. Nobody came, and said that the sailors who had taken her prisoner smothered her in the swamp. She was never found. Shortly after that, men who were working in the garden, or a single man alone, working in the garden, either cutting hay or looking after the vegetables, the sightings began, but it was a sighting that was very disturbing, because the accounts that I got from the men, and as a matter of fact, there was a couple of men who were now deceased. There's another guy who will not, he's not deceased, but he's not talking. He won't say it in public. But they all witnessed the same type of association. They would be working alone. A person would work alone. The first sighting, they saw a woman come up from the swamp. What they thought was a woman in the beginning. And she had on a gray, light summer's cloak. And as she was probably 75, 80 feet, which is the normal, they were saying, they would be overcome with a stench. The stench was not unlike rotten eggs. And the stench was more than just getting your throat. The stench was so powerful that it seemed to lock you in position. You weren't able to move. Losing your breath, the woman would get closer, and all of a sudden she wasn't a woman anymore. She was some kind of apparition. She was near the foot of the man. The man now would be on his back, pretty much unable to breathe, almost falling into unconsciousness, and she would crawl up over, starting at his feet, and she would hover over him. And the words that were always said, "Now you'll feel what I felt." And it was the woman would come right down on top, you know, in a prone position, and that's all you could feel was the oppressive smell, the stink, and it was like rotten eggs. When the first man, when it happened to the first man, basically the other man went over in the garden because he hadn't returned home as the sun went down, and several men went looking for him. When they did find him, and again, this is came from people who were there at the scene at the time, when they took him back to his house, they said the stench on him was just like somebody had dipped him in an old outhouse.
Wow.
It was horrific. The stink was unreal. He wasn't dead. She never ever killed anybody. And when they took him back, Dr. Templeman, who was the doctor of our hospital's named after, he was the first man. He was the doctor that arrived there. And again, there were a bunch of men and women in the house, and the stink, as I was told a half dozen times, but the first victim was just about unbearable. When Dr. Templeman came in, he asked him what had happened. Did somebody tip over the old slop pail? What happened? Somebody have rotten eggs? Or what's going on? And when he went over to examine the man, he got the story in front of a whole pile of other people. From what I heard, Dr. Templeman no more believed it now than you believe the sun rises in the west, right? But he was, this man was the first victim. He would never go back in Dobbin's garden by himself. And then after that, there was probably within that first year before the fall came, there's probably another 7 or 8 men that fell into the same role. Mm. And these hauntings have gone on late up into the 1980s, 1990s, and probably more.
Mm.
So, trying to get this out of some people was like pulling teeth.
Absolutely.
But I got the same story from different people, and my father now has passed away 25 years, and my father also told me the same story, but he was fortunate in a way that as he was leaving Dobbin's garden when the sun was going down, my father was a very big man. He was leaned over the fence, and he saw this. He turned around because he smelled this awful stench. And when he turned around, he saw the young woman coming up. He fell over the fence, or the fence broke because he was leaning on it. He fell outside of Dobbin's garden, and as he turned around, what he saw, and his account was he saw a young woman. As he fell outside the garden, she stopped and turned and went back.
Mm.
Now, my father was a total disbeliever, even up till the day he died, and he even thought that somebody was trying to pull a trick on him. And even when I asked him, I said, "Well, what about the stink?" He said, "Well," he said, "that could have been easily done with a rotten egg." So, the ghost of Dobbin's Garden is, even people have seen her today.
Really?
Right? And it's a one-on-one situation.
Has there been
any... It takes place in Dobbin's Garden in the summer.
Has there been any recent, apparitions, we'll say, or any recent stories coming from Dobbin's Garden?
The most recent one is probably, I got it, 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it's very hard to get people to talk about it because you're seen as a fool, or you're kidding, or you're making the story up, right?
Uh-huh.
That's why I believe the story's from way back, because when I've talked to, spoke with different people who were, to my mind, very credible, I get the story that's similar, but not exactly the same. You know, it was always a woman. It's always appears to be a young woman coming up, what they consider a gray summer's cloak, almost like a shawl. That cloak, as you get near, it gets raggedy. The stench is just unbearable. It gets in your throat so much you can't even breathe. And they all describe the same thing as this young woman as she slowly crawls up on hands and knees. They can't even describe the face. Some of them will say it looks like a dog's face, full of scabs and everything else. Other people say it's just a skeleton face with just bare skin all over it. But some men said they've closed their eyes because they couldn't stand the stink and everything else, but they couldn't turn their heads. They were totally paralyzed.
Mm, interesting.
So it's something that, I've heard so many stories about, but always the same story.
And it's interesting, too. There's so many ghost stories from all over Newfoundland, but I'm going to say that's probably the first one where the sense of smell has ever really been the biggest attractor, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right, because it's a paralyzing type stench. Everybody that told me, it's like as you start to smell it, it's like you just glue it in the spot. You can't move. Right? And it's overwhelming. It seems like the crawl from your feet right up to your nostrils. And as you go down, it's just the whole area around you just has this horrid smell. Right? It's just pure sulfur. And if you've ever smelled a rotten egg, and I lived on a farm when I was young, and if you broke an egg and it was rotten, you knew it was rotten.
Yes, sir.
Let me tell you. You wouldn't hold your nose over that.
Absolutely not. You know, tell me a little tiny bit of, one thing I've heard by and by is the name Swamp Hag. Now, that's something I've heard before, but is that just another name for the Queen of the Fairies?
That's just another name for that was a, I did an interview a number of years ago for Creepy Canada.
Mm-hmm.
There was a show that was on, and they asked me the story, and I told them the story, and they changed it to the Swamp Hag.
Mm.
It's no more of a hag than they actually combined about 3 stories together to make up the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was sort of like bastardized the whole thing.
So, we're going to make it clear to everybody in Newfoundland right now, there's no such thing as a swamp hag. She's the queen of the fairies, and you better call her queen, too, by the sounds of things.
No, and she's not the swamp hag is not the queen. The swamp hag is actually the ghost of Dobbin's Garden.
Uh-huh.
The queen of the fairies is such a malevolent creature that... And the number of people I interviewed, and I have interviewed a lot about this, she is a changeling. She's an entity. She reports. She She fears nothing, nobody, no gods, no devils, no nothing. She is unreal. A lot of people going up through what's the area of number 4 where we have now permission to use that mine.
So tell me a little tiny bit more about the story of the Queen of the Fairies. I got to know more about her.
The Queen of the Fairies is like we portrayed her because one story goes like she can enter your body. And she does. The Queen of the Fairies can make you just, and over the years on Bellon, by the way, this over, and we're talking about, we're going back to present time to hundreds of years. There's been people disappeared without a trace. Okay? You can either blame, you can take a look at that how you wish, but it is what it is. They've disappeared, not a lot, but a few. And they've all been seen going through the woods or going up through a path around number 4 area. The bottom line is that this creature can take over your body. This creature can basically take your life and make you melt into the forest. This creature can send you back as crippled up in so many different ways you wouldn't even be recognizable. She can also enter your body and enter your home and do as she wishes. She's the only thing she, and she doesn't fear it, the only thing she can't penetrate is iron ore. And she's not afraid of it. But you just, you know, I'll tell you a little thing about this. Number 4 mines closed out in 1962. So we're not talking times or time and place where people were overly superstitious. This is 1962. This is modern day, right? When number 4 mines was operational, there was anywhere from 300 to 400 men or maybe more working in the mine. They had what was called a dry house. Now, a dry house is a place where you shower up and wash and everything else. Now, since you did number 2 mine tour, you have an idea from the tour guides how full of red iron ore, dust, and everything you were. You were coated after the end of a shift. The men having all these modern conveniences at number 4 mine where they could actually wash up and if they wish get a shower, etc., they didn't use it. And for a simple reason, they would come home with covered in muck, which was the iron ore, that kind of dust. They wouldn't do it because that's how much they feared the Fairy Queen. You keep this on you till you get home.
It's almost like a spiritual armor of sorts.
It was an armor of such because, as my grandmother told me years ago, she said, iron is the only thing that keeps her at bay. But she's not afraid that she just can't penetrate it. And because my grandmother used to creep me out with the things she would say and the things she'd know, right? But this Fairy Queen has appeared in the number 4 woods area, number 4 wood mine, sorry, as a beautiful young girl. She's appeared as a dog. She's appeared as the trees that move, the grass that creeps. She can appear as she wishes. And whatever she thinks she needs to be, she will be.
That's insane. I love this story because you never know. She could be watching you right now.
Well, we say when we do our haunted tour and everybody is given actually iron ore, the young lady who portrays the Fairy Queen, she'll tell you right now that I could be, or you could be infected with the Fairy Queen. Right? You'll never know till you go home. And that will take time. And the person that you went in with is not the person you came out with.
Henry, it's so much fun to hear the folklore and the stories of good old Belle Island, but you know, I gotta know, it can't all be folklore for Henry Crane. Henry, have you ever had an experience yourself on Belle Island you would deem paranormal?
I've had actually two. And the first one I had, I was 12 years old. That was down at my grandmother's house. My grandfather had passed away when I was only 2 years old, and I have no memory of him. And, you know, my grandmother would, we were there one night, and, you know, we got to go back now to about 1962 again when I was about 10 years old because I was born in 1952. And my grandmother, myself and her, we're sitting one night around 10 o'clock, 10:30 or so, and we're toasting old bread on the stove, you know, and we're having a cup of cocoa. And she says, anyway, she said, I'm going to tell you something now. She said, about another 15 minutes, the light is going to go out. The light switch is going to come on. It's going to click. And if, again, I don't know how old you are or anything else, but if you go into houses now, switches are soft, so you don't hear them go up and down. But back in those days, switches were hard switches, so you had to make the big click to get them on, the big click to get them off, right? You knew if somebody turned on the light. So anyway, it was around 11 o'clock, and click, on comes the light. And me and her, it was only me and her, and we were just looking at it. And I couldn't believe it. I said, wow, Mom, that's a trick. Well, how'd you do that? But she said, that's what I was telling you about. She said, that's your grandfather.
Oh.
And I said, well, how is that my grandfather? She said, well, when he used to get off work, he'd get home around 11 o'clock. And she said he would sit here and have a cup of tea and a slice of toast before he went to bed. She said, not all the time, but maybe two or three times a week. And I said, wow, that's wicked. That's awesome. And she said, about 15, 20 minutes now, that little switch is going to go off. So I was a little boy, not afraid of nothing because I was with my grandmother, but I truly believed in. And about 20 minutes after that, click, I watched this light switch went off. I could not get over it. And she said, and I said, wow, I said, grandfather is still around here. He's a ghost, yeah, she said. And so long as he lives in the house, you won't have to worry about it. She said, you don't have to worry about any evil because your grandfather is here.
It's almost like a residual haunting where...
It was.
Yeah.
It never creeped me out because I, you know, like my mother was the same thing. She knew what my grandmother was capable of. And she said, whatever your grandmother says, she said, believe her, right? And so up in present time, I suppose, but not totally in present time, my mother herself passed away 10 years ago. And I was over at my sister's when my sister just had the baby. And it was 9 months after, a year after my mother had passed away. And my sister was feeding the baby. So it was like, say, it was about a year afterwards. And as she was sitting there rocking, I was looking at her from across 10 feet away. And as I started to look at her, my sister, who was, you know, didn't look a lot like my mother, transformed into my mother.
Mm.
I was sitting looking at her, and I couldn't believe it. My mother was a small woman. She was the one feeding the baby. And my sister, I was looking at her for maybe 2 minutes, and my sister said, call him out, and she's Henry. I said, yeah. She said, what's the matter? I said, just looking at mother feeding the baby. Could not get over it. I just, and I wasn't thinking about my mother. I wasn't upset about it. I wasn't crying. I was just talking to my sister about, you know, having a new baby, and poof, wow, I couldn't get over it. And my mother just smiled at me. And I said, holy good God. I'd never seen, and I told my sister what I'd seen. Yeah, she said, that feels like mom was here around here all the time, too. So, yeah, that was two paranormal experiences that I know, like the switch still, I still think about it today, right?
Yeah.
And when I think about my mother, I say, oh my God, I mean, I wasn't tired, I didn't drop off to sleep or nothing. I was just, I was having a conversation with my sister, and all of a sudden she started to change, right? And I wasn't looking at my sister, not anything that resembled my sister, just my mother.
Hmm.
So,
Henry,
that's a bit unreal.
That, my friend, is quite the story, and that's what we love here at the Odd, the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. We love those stories. This is what this podcast is all about. It's about connecting people with the stories. And to be honest with you, there's no better way to preserve history than to talk about people we've loved in the past. Absolutely great.
Yeah, and like I said, I took this on as a time of love, a time as a labor of love, about 7 or 8, maybe 9 years ago now, when I started, I knew some stories growing up, but I wanted to ask the residents, you know, because we sort of like tried to, I don't know, what, maybe it was the catastrophe of the mine shutting down, but we started to bury our folklore and our culture, so I made it my personal vendetta, and that's not the right word, but my personal goal was to get all these stories and collect them and record them. And the more I found out, the more I found about the hauntings, the more I found out about what was made up and what I could verify, and I verified everything that we do in the haunted tour. It's everything that I verified, and I've got more than that. But I could verify and say, listen, this person told me that, and this person told me that, and this happened 5 years ago, and this happened 10 years ago, and this only happened a month ago, etc. And that's the way it would go on. So I got things as much verifiable as you might say could for folklore. And even the young teacher who was in our play, she's had sightings as early as last summer. This summer.
Well, there you go. And there's one thing I'll tell you as a paranormal investigator. For every one person that tells me I'm a crackpot, there's 9 people who just cannot wait to share their own experiences with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do believe that. Henry, it's been awesome. Thank you so much for being on my podcast, man. You did it great.
Perfect.
This is like the fastest 25 minutes of my life. You take care of yourself.
No problem.
Okay.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast, as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.